welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Ringer, the president and CEO of Church Answers.
Did you watch Lost in Space reruns?
No, not at all.
What was it, a 70s show? I don't remember.
Man, I have no idea.
All right. Did you watch the movie?
No.
You do remember the caricatures of the robot?
No.
Where he always gives warnings of danger.
Oh, I knew that, yes.
Danger, danger, yeah. Will Robinson.
Yeah, I've
danger.
Heard that before.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to give you context as to why I'm saying that, because sometimes you look at me with those stares that would indicate I am in another world. And quite frankly, if I am in the 70s, it is another world. So you're exactly right. So we're going to talk about something in this podcast where I'm saying danger, danger, Will Robinson, because you need to be careful with some of the things that we're saying here. Context matters. The answer, it depends, matters. And we will, I'm jumping ahead. First of all, we need to thank our sponsor, Vanderblumen, because they are a great sponsor for Rainer on Leadership.
They are. Vanderblumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting WeStaffTheChurch.com.
Okay, the question is, and the title of the podcast is, should the pastor have visibility to members' giving?
It depends.
It depends. And here's what I predict. I predict that some people will see the title of this podcast on social media, and they will respond viscerally without listening to the content of it. So some of them will look a little bit at the outline that you provide at TomRainer.com without delving in just a little more and respond viscerally to it. My point is, this issue is highly sensitive, and it's sensitive.
You think?
Huh?
You think?
Well, it is in many churches. And again, it depends on the church. If the pastor has never had visibility to giving, it is a difficult thing to move in that direction. If the pastor began with visibility to giving, most people don't think twice about it.
Not a big deal.
So we will delve into this, because there are a lot of secondary, tertiary, and I've always wondered what comes after tertiary. Is it quaternary issues that could take place if we talk about the pastor having visibility to giving? So we're going to look at seven of them.
All right. First of all, we got to understand the different levels of visibility.
All right. What's the greatest level?
You're seeing like item by item, person by person, check by check.
You have access to giving records. You probably have a sign-in online to the financial giving records. You have your password, and you just go through and you just look at them item by item. I mean, that does happen. And I'm thinking right now as I'm saying this, there are some people out there saying, what?
Oh, gosh.
They're just, I didn't know that. Well, listen, listener, if you're able to get to the part of listening to the podcast beyond the social media announcement or the blog post outline, we are not necessarily advocating one way or another. We are discussing the issue. And I bet if we took a poll, in fact, I did take a poll not too long ago. And it was, I know what it was. I'm not going to mention the denominational group, but it was a denomination outside my denomination. And, been coaching some of their leaders, and had many of them on a Zoom call, and I asked them this question. I said, how many of you, and by the way, they're in this group, they're 11,
okay?
So to give you context, how many of you have total visibility to your members' giving? Now, do you know that, without responding the denomination's name, do you know the denomination I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so having that in mind, 11 people that are 11 leaders that I were coaching, you get to guess how many have total visibility to the giving.
Six.
Close, seven.
Oh.
So in that particular denomination, at least is represented by those 11 pastors.
75% or so.
Yeah, 7 out of 11, 68% or so. Yeah. Seven out of 11 have visibility, total visibility to the giving. I believe if you were to go to our denomination, Southern Baptist, particularly churches 10 years or older, maybe 20 years older,
it'd be a lot lower.
It'd be maybe 2 or 3% would be my guess. I don't know. I'm pulling that out of the air. So you got to understand.
Tom Rainer said.
No.
Only 2 to 3%.
Yeah, now it becomes
be on the back of a book jacket for somebody.
Yeah, along with 80%, which I am not going to get into in this particular podcast. So different levels of visibility are total visibility. I know a number of pastors that have a connection with a financial secretary or someone of similar position. They say, if there's a new giver, let me know. I want to send them a thank you note. If there is someone that has stopped giving, let me know, because that's a early warning sign that something bad is happening, and if you can help me. Or if there's a sudden big gift, let me know. You don't have to let me know the size of the gift, but let me know so I can send a thank you note. That's mm-hmm. another visibility where there's a relationship with the financial secretary or someone of similar title, where you don't have specific visibility, but you are at least getting some kind of information. I know a pastor, and I really like this exercise. He asked the financial secretary to give him details of giving by age. So 20 to 30, 30 to 40, and not by name, but the different, like how many give in 20 to 30, how many give 0 to 5,000? How many give 5,000?
So break down in each age group.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, why is he doing that? But one of the things he wants to see is he wants to look at the 70 and up.
Yeah.
And he wants to see, are we in danger of losing some of our biggest givers? I have talked to a number of pastors who have done similar exercises, and there is a myth that seems to be dispelled by that. And the most common myth is that the builders and older boomers are the biggest givers.
Yeah.
That is not happening in these churches. These are established churches that I'm hearing from, and none of them say that the 65 and up are the biggest giving group.
Well, then who is it?
Usually,
or is it split out pretty well?
Usually it's the older Gen X.
So probably the empty nesters.
And the younger boomers.
Yeah.
So younger to mid boomers.
Yeah.
I was born in 1955. You could almost make that as a cutoff point. 55 all the way back to, I don't know, born in 75, something like that. So
those roughly 40, 45.
43 to 63, 45 to 65, in that range. You're right. There's a lot of empty nesters. It's peak giving.
Peak earning, too.
Yeah. That's what I meant. I meant peak earning.
Well, peak earning should be peak giving.
Peak giving.
Right.
And more often than not, the seniors are going on fixed incomes, which is significantly less, which we sometimes forget.
Yeah.
They may be faithful in their tithe, but that which they are tithing is smaller.
Yeah.
So,
because the earning potential is down.
Earning potential is down. Exactly. Hmm. So, understand the different levels of visibility.
All right, number two, you got to understand that giving to nonprofits other than churches is increasing, but church giving at the same time is decreasing.
Okay, pastors, other leaders who are listening, staff persons, lay leaders, listen carefully to this. Nonprofit giving other than churches is up significantly since the Great Recession. Mm. I don't know the number. I recently saw some of the data, but off the top of my head, I don't remember the data. Non-church, non-profit giving is up significantly. But listen to this. Church giving, which is a form of non-profit, church giving is down. I don't recall it being down significantly, but it is down. So what we are having is we are having leaders of non-profits ask for their constituency to give. We're having pastors not ask on whether their members should give. So sometimes visibility, even if it's a second level visibility where you don't have specificity, but you do have a someone in the know, sometimes just have an idea of what's going on can embolden, encourage a pastor to ask someone to give. I've given the story on 3 or 4 different occasions about the pastor who had heard from a senior adult in the church that another senior adult, a widow, had come into an inheritance from her husband 3 or 4 years earlier of several million dollars. She continued to live the same modest lifestyle in the same home that she and her deceased husband had lived for decades. And the church went into a building program, and someone told the pastor, you need to go talk. I'll just say, you know, her name is Esther.
So
her name is Esther. And he goes to Esther and he said, Esther, I'm sorry to be so bold about this, but it's my understanding your husband left you in a good position. Also, your friend told me that you hate paying taxes and you'd rather give it away than pay taxes. And I just want to see if you're willing to make a significant gift to our building program. He had never done that before. And here's what Esther says. Esther said, I would love to give to the church, except I've already given all of my money away. Where did you give it away? Well, 3 years ago, the president of the local university in town came and talked to me and gave me this great vision for the art department in the university and asked if I would make a significant gift. And he said, virtually, I gave away the millions that I had because I just didn't want them. And he said, why didn't you give some to the church? Her response was, nobody asked. Huh. And so you've got that reality that's going on. If a pastor had at least secondary or tertiary visibility to the reality of what Esther was going through, he may have asked at the right time instead of too little, too late.
All right. So I got the giving stats here.
Okay.
Found it. It looks like the percent of where money is going has dropped. In 1990, about 50% of all charitable giving went to churches, synagogues, mosques, temples. So okay. Religious giving.
Okay.
It's now 32-31%.
Wow. Wow. The slice of the pie has gone from half to a third.
Yeah.
But so, I do know in the other stat that total nonprofit giving is up as well.
Oh, yeah.
So the pie is bigger. Mm-hmm. The slice is significantly smaller.
Yes.
And we're often afraid to do anything about that as pastors in church.
So a lot of money is being given to charitable causes, but fewer and fewer of those dollars from a whole piece of the pie continues to decrease.
Yep. And there are other reasons. Are you being transparent? Do people really believe in the cause? Are you talking about a vision rather than just, hey, we need money to pay the bills at the church? There are a lot of issues that are taking place there, but one of them is pastors don't even know to ask. And in the meantime, all these other nonprofit leaders are asking boldly.
Yeah. And that was from the New York Times. So,
okay. Well, that's
depending on who you ask, it's a reputable source.
Okay. There. Our audience will definitely be divided on that one.
Yes. All right. Number three, pastors are expected to have visibilities in all other areas of discipleship.
Okay. In all of the areas of discipleship, Jesus spoke about money more than any other area, okay? Quantitatively. Yep. That didn't mean it was his greatest emphasis, but quantitatively, he spoke about stewardship more than any other area of discipleship. And you talk about time in the Word and prayer and walking with the Lord and fasting and all those other areas that would be true discipleship. He talked about money. But in churches, we don't talk about money and stewardship that often as a really important area of discipleship because it is a true reflection of the heart.
Yeah. Why would we not couch that as a measure of a growing disciple? And in most instances, we talk about it in one-off type things, but we don't really place the emphasis on that, it seems, at times as we do church attendance, Bible reading, etc., you know, service, missions. Why do we leave that one out?
We shouldn't. There's not a good why to it other than the why is we are afraid to talk about money. Pastors have heard a few people say, it's usually a lot fewer than
people that aren't giving.
No, I'm talking about the general populace outside the church.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all those pastors ever talk about is money.
Yeah.
But that you don't hear that.
I can't remember the last sermon I heard on money.
Well, but you don't hear the outside world saying that much. You've heard a few say that, and so now we have concluded we can't talk about money because we can't reach people.
Yeah.
So it's a fear factor. Mm-hmm. So that's the why is not a good why.
All right. Number four, the problem of placing non-giving or low-giving leaders. There was a blog post, I think. It was a blog post or another podcast that we did on this.
Well, I've talked about it in different contexts. I don't know if we did one specifically.
It all blurs together.
Well, you're looking at nearly 500 Rainer on Leadership episodes. This is episode number 478. Yeah. We're almost to 100.
At, it was something recent, though.
Revitalize and Replant. And then I don't know, have any idea how many blog posts I've written. So, and then
a couple thousand.
And Rainer Report, the video.
Yeah. So it all runs together, folks.
And a few books on top of that. But we have talked on a number of occasions about non-giving and low-giving leaders going into positions of leadership. And I've given the example of the guy who was head of my finance committee. And he was running the show. I mean, he was at the point in time when I was there, he was not a bully, but he was a control freak. And when we started talking about in that context, maybe before we put people in positions of key leadership, well, we're going to get to that one.
Yeah, but we're going to get four is tied to three, and you got to realize that you wouldn't put people in other areas of leadership in the church if they weren't strong in other areas of discipleship. You wouldn't put a guy who isn't really involved in missions or interested in missions in charge of the missions trip to wherever.
You would not put someone head of your Bible study groups that never cracks his Bible.
Exactly.
Yep. You wouldn't put someone in charge of local community evangelism that doesn't share his faith.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you should.
Or any other thing.
Any other thing. Yes. Not just limited to that one area.
Yeah.
And so. Yep. So we've got the challenge that if you don't know pastor and you are recommending, whether you have the authority to appoint or you go to a nominating committee, whatever, if you don't know the giving, you may have some of your worst disciples in some of the most critical positions of leadership and discipleship in the church.
Yeah. And the easy way to, if you don't have visibility, is just to have whoever is making the nominations give the list of names and say, please confirm that these are, you know, regular givers or thing like that. And if not, then take them off the list.
In our tradition, for those churches that have a nominating and then a voting process on deacons, that usually happens. But it doesn't happen for other positions within the church. And it should happen always with the deacons as well.
Yeah. All right. Number five, how do you say thank you if you don't know what people are giving?
Exactly. That's why I go back to the fact that, okay, pastor, if you don't have primary visibility, which means detail to all the giving, would you be willing to have secondary visibility where a financial secretary, and again, I'm saying that's, there could be other names for that, tells you here's a new giver, and you just put off a note, hey, thanks for starting giving to the church. It's greatly appreciated. You can even say you don't know the amounts, but put in there. If someone gave an unusually large gift, do you want to say thank you if it's out of their norm?
Thank you for giving to the Lord.
Oh gosh, I knew that you were going there with
I was going there with
Ray Bolt. I saw the gleam in your eye. Yes,
from the Silver Dome,
Pontiac Silver Dome. That's a story in itself. So, how do you say thank you if you don't have some level of visibility? Listen, pastors and other church leaders, those nonprofits are really good about saying thank you. For example, I give a lot to churches. Okay, that sounds arrogant, but you know, that's where my heart is with two local churches in particular, where my two sons are pastors, and that's where my giving goes. But I do give to other causes, and way down on the list, but I give to this cause.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's the University of Alabama, to both the alumni fund and to the athletic fund. And again, it's not my highest priority. So don't come back and be a hater about that. And particularly if you have allegiance elsewhere. So
I'm surprised at how little you give to.
Well, yes, that is true. But I want to tell you something. Every time I give, not only do I get a thank you, but twice a year I get this big package of goodies. I mean,
nice.
I give them to Jess. I don't use them, you know, tags for the car and books on Alabama and things like that. The point is, I know that someone is looking at my giving to say thank you. Mm-hmm. And then I get not necessarily a handwritten note, but a hand signed note from the athletic director. Now, Nick has never sent me a letter.
Oh.
But the athletic director, the former and the and the current one have. So
saw the big announcement this week.
The big announcement that?
They're bringing back Dixie Down the Light.
I did see that.
That's not going to end well. You know it's not going to end well. And by the time this airs, it probably will have already ended and not ended well.
We'll see.
So
It's happening at the Missouri game, which will be in the past when this airs.
That's not going to end well.
Okay.
All right. Number six, why pastors are often fearful of asking individual members to give.
One, you're fearful of them saying no. Two, you're fearful that individual members will think that you're getting out of your lane.
Mm-hmm.
Three, you are fearful of criticism. Four, you've never done it before.
Well, I'm afraid, too. I think some pastors are afraid that members will say no.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yep. The fear of rejection.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, and finally, realize that the biggest objections to visibility typically come from non-givers and low givers.
We hear this again and again.
They don't want to be exposed.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And the example I gave of the guy that headed up all of our finances at the church, ultimately, the financial secretary walks in and says, I'm going to tell you something you've told me not to tell you. I said, what is that? By the time she told me, it was too late. Such and such has never given a penny to the church. And I don't remember my reaction because I didn't have a mirror in front of me, but it was probably my mouth agape.
Yep, just
for several seconds.
Chin on the floor.
Yes.
What?
This is the guy that talks about why we need to support this ministry and know why we can't cut here and is more likely to want to cut salaries than any other
that
area.
Blows my mind.
Yeah. Zero giving in the church. And the good thing about it is she was not a member of the church.
Oh, the financial secretary?
Financial secretary was not a member of the church. So she came in without any agenda other than to say, Pastor, I think you need to know this. So as you know, I've told the story. I turned that over to other leadership.
Yeah.
I didn't handle it. And it did not end well. I can say that.
You think?
Yeah. It ended up being a blow up. But, it happened. But that the point is the griping comes from those who aren't. If someone were to say, we're going to list all the giving, or we're going to list all the giving records where I give, I say, okay. Because some of them do. I mean, some of them say, some of them have lists, giving 5,000 and up, giving 10,000 and up.
We had somebody contact us about this one time that says that they like post publicly, like
they put on the board the weekly cumulative giving.
Yeah, and who gave what?
Yeah, we were at a meeting in Virginia when we heard this.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, we put it on a board and you can see their cumulative amount of giving.
I'm like, wow.
That's visibility to the max. Everybody gets to see that.
I just could not. I still can't really process that.
But think about it. How many nonprofits list giving by category?
Well, we're in a political season right now. Then don't they have to disclose gifts of certain sizes or whatever?
Check the Tennessean, and it would be yesterday from the time that we're doing this. The Tennessean listed the top givers in Middle Tennessee to Trump.
Oh.
So they listed them by amount. No, Jonathan, I was not.
I'm just going to ask. I was going to ask if there was anybody we know on that list.
Yeah. Number two and three were Diane Black and her husband.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
You know, Diane Black. Black's
was a congresswoman.
Is a congresswoman, just got defeated.
In a gubernatorial
primary.
Yeah, so she's not running for Congress anymore.
So she.
She was my congresswoman.
Okay.
When I lived in Lebanon.
Okay. And then her husband owns a CEO of a company he founded. He's very wealthy.
Yes.
So they were number two and three. I didn't know the person who was number one.
Aegis Labs or something like that.
I think
that's the name of his group.
So, yeah, that's political giving.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you got in the top 30, 35 if you gave $100. So there's a lot of small giving going on.
Yeah. Huh. Fascinating.
All right. So thank you for putting up with this. But as always, thank you for Midwestern Seminary for their sponsorship, their leadership, and all the great things they are doing.
Yeah. If you're in need of a ministry training degree, their MDiv is just 81 hours and gives you a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, offering you everything you need and nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City and train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church, or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. You can start your training today and find out more at mbts.edu/mdiv. We were just on the campus at Midwestern recently and saw all the improvements that they got there. The new Mathena Center just opened.
Yeah.
And
wow. It is incredible.
I mean, they're killing it up there.
They are.
Had a great time in Kansas City.
Yeah. Good to be with Jason. Good to be with Charles. Good to be with the other Jason and several others.
Mm-hmm.
Start naming people and I'll leave some off. But appreciate what they're doing and always appreciate their support.
All right. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now on Spotify. And you can find us in any podcasting
app.
We're
on Spotify?
Yeah, on Spotify now.
Good for you.
How about that? They just opened it up. And then join us online at TomRainer.com, where we're growing healthy churches together.